welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors. For each episode, we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on this show, we are looking at director Woody Allen and his 2017 film, Wonder Wheel. Returning on the show today to talk about Wonder Wheel is Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
So if I could summarize this movie in just a few, in just one word, it would be... It's one of the most boring movies I have ever seen. It was about an hour into it, and I was begging for it to end, just because it's boring. And no, I'm not somebody who just wants to see actions and gunfights or anything. I wasn't intrigued that much by the story. I didn't really care for any of the characters. The dialogue, which we'll get into later, just really was overly pretentious and got on my nerves so much. There are these side stories that are never brought up again, like have served no purpose. You could take them out of the movie and they wouldn't have changed one iota of information. I did not like this movie at all. And which, for those who don't know, this is going to be part of a thing we're going to be playing at our community college. So I feel bad in saying don't show up to this thing because this movie is absolutely awful. But I'm just going to, buyer beware. If you want to, I would say form your own opinion. Judge it for yourself. You may like it, that I don't. But this is one of the most boring movies I have ever seen, and I did not like this movie at all. I think this is Dogville I really hated. This is about as bad as Dogville for me.
How do you really feel, Alex? I don't hate it quite as much as you do. I think it has some redeeming qualities. But I did not think it was boring. I mean, I had problems with many of the things that you mentioned, but I was not bored. We chose this film because all the films have the idea of wonder in them. And Woody Allen is such a force to be reckoned with, you know, whether you like him or not, that I figured since he had this pretty major film that came out with pretty major stars in it, we had to include it because some diehard Woody Allen fans will want to see it regardless. And, you know, it's also, it has, you mentioned all the unlikable characters, which is really true. But to me, it was kind of like the amusement park itself. There's something about trying so hard to have fun. And if things aren't going your way, it's almost nightmarish, not fun, not like childhood glee. It's like the exact opposite.
That's one of the things, like you said, it's like it's in Coney Island, but never once did you feel like the Coney Island amusement park is a character in the movie. Sure, the entire movie takes place there. There's all the locations on the boardwalk, the Oyster restaurant, which is where Kate Winslet and Juno Temple work at, the beaches. But I never got the sense that it was like a character. Like in other movies, like for example, one I just recently watched was Lost in Translation. You really feel in that movie like Tokyo is a character in that movie. Coney Island, this movie doesn't really feel like it's just something in the background that never really plays that huge of an effect. And that's another thing I didn't like about this movie.
See, I think that the movie itself is the background. Like Coney Island is that phony front that you have in all those old Hollywood sets. It's got this great exterior. But if you're actually working there, you never see that. You're behind the scenes and it's just drudgery and all these hopes that you have are never going to come to pass. It's like the quintessential place to put despair, right behind what's supposed to be like thrilling and exciting. And you don't ever get that sense of, oh, cotton candy, going on a thrill ride. None of that is part of your experience. It's all the underside.
But I didn't really get that much like underside or sleaziness in this movie about Coney Island. All you see about it is all the attractions. You know, the little shooting range where you can win prizes, the beaches. Nothing really felt like grimy or sleazy or dirty. I didn't quite get that. Even like, I know they bring it up in the beginning, this is kind of when, like, I think it was Timberlake, he was saying, like, this is kind of when Coney Island started getting sleazy. I don't really get any of the sleaziness. There's no crooks, there's no criminals. I didn't really get that.
Well, you do have the mob showing up looking for Juno Temple.
But like they're away from somebody else.
But I think the sleaziness and the despair comes from the being trapped. I mean, one of the things that comes out really clear is how trapped Kate Winslet's character is, because her husband is he's got the money to let his daughter escape from that life by letting her go to school and he'll pay for it. But he won't do that for Kate Winslet. She's somehow not, worthy. And so she's just sort of toiling. And knowing that fact just makes it worse. And knowing what she's guilty of makes it even worse. Everything makes it worse. And then her complicity in what happens to Juno Temple. I mean, it's like a snowball running downhill, mm-hmm. picking up debris.
Yeah, and I have to say, even though you do feel, I guess, a bit of sympathy for her, I didn't think she was a very likable character, especially at a lot of parts she was kind of very selfish.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of parts it was just like, you know, like you said, even what she does at the end, the Juno Temple character didn't do anything wrong to her. She's mm-hmm. trying to do everything right, and for the day one, she hates her for no reason.
Yeah, but not for no reason. Because she represents everything that she can no longer have. Youth, beauty, mm-hmm. the ability to hold on to the lifeguard, her husband's attention, love, and support, money, everything. It's this interloper who comes and just takes everything from her in her mind. So mm-hmm. not like, and she, but you know, you're right, Juno Temple isn't trying to do anything. She's just being young and, mm-hmm. you know, there's no culpability.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And one thing I think is done really well is, of course, the audience knows everything. And you see Juno Temple's character and Kate Winslet talking. And you see how this is affecting Kate Winslet's character. But of course, you know, Caroline doesn't understand what she's saying is devastating. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to watch. There's a lot of acting done without words that I think is very effective.
There's a lot of, yeah, you say there's a lot of acting without words, but there is there's way too much dialogue in this film. This is the biggest complaint I have with this movie. It doesn't feel like a movie. It feels like a play.
Mm-hmm. And it does.
And the way, not only with, like, it mostly takes place in this one setting, mainly in that little
apartment
they live in, but they never really get out of Coney Island. But just the way the dialogue is, the main thing is it's an overabundance of exposition.
But that's Woody Allen. He's a talky director.
Thing is, with somebody like Aaron Sorkin, I'm not the world's biggest Aaron Sorkin fan, but overall I enjoy his movies. There's a style, there's a wit to it. But in this one, it's just like the minute Belushi comes in, he gives every little bit of backstory to Juno Temple's character. You did this, you did this. And then she gives more backstory. Like everybody just gives overabundance. It's exposition, exposition, exposition. And
a lot of telling instead of showing.
Yeah, and that's when the movie just started to bore me, because it was just them, let me tell you what happened to me at this time. Let me tell you what happened to me. Let me tell you why I'm doing this. Let me tell you why I'm doing this. That's when I started to fall asleep and constantly checking the time and like, okay, it's got 40 minutes left. Great.
You know, poor Jim Belushi's wasted in this role.
I was surprised to see him because last thing I remember him was that According to Jim sitcom like 15 years ago. I was surprised to see him. Like, that Jim Belushi? What has he been doing lately?
You know, we actually saw him in one of the movies we talked about, which is Wag the Dog. Real small role.
Oh,
because,
yeah,
you know, we're on Albania. They're interviewing people. That did occur to me when I was watching the movie. It's like, oh, yeah, Wag the Dog. Yeah, there's always something a little bittersweet about seeing Jim Belushi, because at first you think, oh, it's John. No, it can't be John Belushi. Oh, right, it's Jim Belushi. Yeah. He's a solid actor, but he's wasted in this. This is such a stock character. It's mm-hmm. all stereotype. You never have any. Did you have any sympathy for him?
No, he's this a-hole, drunk,
yeah,
neglectful husband. I didn't really care for him at all.
Yeah, I didn't either. No, he was not redeemable. I did have moments where I felt for Kate Winslet's character, but she's a pretty awful character. But I thought it was pretty brave the way she played her that way. She didn't try to make her excuse what she did.
Yeah, I would say if there's a performance, I guess she would be the best. But another thing is just, once again, it really feels like a play. Like everyone I felt was just overacting, not only with the lines, but they're, you know, constantly going over the top with emotions. And the worst part, I would say, would be Justin Timberlake's character.
His
character was the most irritating character in the movie.
I didn't buy the relationship between him and Kate Winslet at all.
Mm-mm.
I mean, I could see why she would be, you know, oh, the attractive lifeguard. Yeah. But I didn't see why he liked her.
No, and once again with the dialogue, like, his dialogue was so irritating. He was like, I'm attracted, like, to Eugene O'Neill with, you know, the works and the, you know, the struggle for everyday life. I'm like, nobody talks like this. Shut up.
And I've seen him in other things where I found him, you know, okay.
Social Network.
Yeah, he's been in a couple of things. And, of course, he's a performer, so he knows how to perform. But he was awful in this. Just god-awful.
You think it's mainly his performance, or was it the thing of just miscasting? They got the wrong person.
I think it's the wrong person. You know, he's too recognizable, and I'm looking at it thinking, but you're older than this character you're supposed to be playing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just wasn't buying him as a young 20 something.
Yeah, and it's in, like, there's this whole thing where he's supposed to be this war veteran from World War II. And he's like, I've been through all these places, and you just never get that. It seems like to me he was like reciting the dialogue, like this when he's talking to Juno Temple in the car, and he goes, "Wow, I've been all around the world, but you've been around the block." It's, once again, with bad dialogue and bad delivery, his character. I was not interested, and even he never gets that upset. Like even at the end, when he finds out that, you know, he had her get, you know, he had, you know, she had, Kate Winslet had Juno Temple killed by the mob.
Well, no, she just doesn't help.
Well, didn't she like call in?
No, they were on their way. She found out. And then she went to go call the restaurant where Juno Temple was going to meet, and then stopped herself. And the guy actually answered the phone saying the name of the restaurant. And then you see this realization on her face, like, wait a minute, this would take care of everything. But then she just hangs up. No, she's guilty of not helping.
I bet. I thought she called it in. But
no, then she would completely. Who would? No, you couldn't redeem the character at all after that. But you understand why she does it. You don't necessarily agree with it, but it makes sense, and you understand she's also decided to do a really terrible thing and then try to live with it.
Okay, now I get it. But anyway, with when Timberlake confronts her, saying like, "You knew about this and you did nothing," he never gets upset. He just kind of has this, like, he doesn't really get upset. He's not really happy. There's no emotion in there. And he gives, like, this, once again, ham-fisted, you know, really pretentious, ponderous exposition, and then he leaves.
But see, somebody who really understood Eugene O'Neill would have completely understood. And he hadn't known Juno Temple's character long enough to even... His loyalty really was to Kate Winslet. That kind of made him an even bigger jerk in my mind.
That he would, you know, that he knew he was in love with Juno Temple, but he wanted to stay loyal to Kate Winslet?
No, that he really didn't know he was in love with Juno Temple. He was just kind of, you know, availing himself of all options. But I didn't get the sense that it was like, oh my God, you ruined my life because that was the woman that I love. No, it's just more of a sanctimonious lecture from this punk kid.
Yeah, like you would lecture a child if they broke a vase in the house or something.
Yeah, and who would talk to somebody that way who gave them that gift? I mean, you would not be that cold.
Yeah, he said, I can't accept this. Like, she spent all this money and she had it engraved for him, and he's just like, I can't accept this. I don't want this.
Yeah, it was rude.
Very rude.
So, yeah, he was terrible.
And another thing that I don't like about this movie is it has one of the most pointless side stories of all time with this kid that's a pyromaniac. We constantly see that this kid, you know, he's a troublemaker. He sets things on fire. He get, you know, he's always playing hooky and watching the movies instead of going to school. And you're thinking, and like, he keeps doing it, and he's getting more, it's increasing. And you think like it's going to head off or it's going to connect to this other story. It doesn't. So the last thing we see about him, they're getting Belushi and Winslet are getting to a big fight about, you know, the daughter. And then he says, can I have 50 cents to go to the movies? He says, here, now you can't steal it. And then that's it. That's the last we see of him. There was no point to it. You could have taken this kid out, taken the whole side story out, and it wouldn't have made one bit of difference.
I agree completely. And the sad thing is, I think it was put in there for comic relief. I think we were supposed to laugh every time we saw this kid acting out like that. And instead, it was just kind of horrifying.
Yeah, and it was just like no point to it. Yeah, like you said, I wasn't... That's another thing with this movie. Now, Woody Allen, you know, you think of like Annie Hall or even like his earlier days when he was very slapstick. And she's know, it's a lot of associated with comedy. Did you find this film funny at all? Did you find anything funny?
There was nothing funny in this movie. It's a very serious movie with acting, with a capital A.
Yeah, acting.
And I wonder if some of those wooden performances from people like Justin Timberlake are because he's just not ready for prime time, meaning Woody Allen. Because I think everybody wants to work with Woody Allen because he has directed so many people in Academy Award winning performances. So I think, you know, he's got a lot of credibility. But I wonder if there was more to the story with the pyromaniac that got cut, because it made no sense. The kid made sense because it provided a way for you to see that, you know, Jim Belushi's character simply was never going to step up and be any sort of stepfather of any kind. So you have that, you know that that's a source of contention. But why does the kid have to be a pyromaniac?
Yeah, because he makes you think, like, he's destroying stuff. He's going to destroy something important. Like, he's going to hurt somebody. He's going to hurt one of the main characters, hopefully, just to make that side story have a payoff. There's no payoff, and that's what frustrated me the most. I was like, why was that even in the movie then?
Yeah, unless you really want to work some sort of metaphor about how the very presence of this child, you know, burnt the family down. But that's a stretch.
Yeah. And another thing I didn't like was when it's showing that, and then Timberlake has that overly pretentious narration. He goes, what does he see in the fire? Does he see the flames of youth or whatever the hell he was talking about? And just like, shut up. Nobody talks like this. Stop. Like, once again, that's a little bit beef with Woody Allen, but we'll get into that a bit later. So we've been crapping on this movie a lot. I do want, we'll get into a few things. You said you enjoyed a few things. Mm-hmm. And this wasn't entirely a disaster for me. There were a couple of things I kind of enjoyed. Well, I said overall this movie wasn't funny at all. It did have one funny kind of moment, which when we saw the cameos from the two Sopranos stars. Now, Sopranos is one of my all-time favorite TV series, and this had Bobby Bacala and Paulie, and Tony Sirico was Paulie. I think his last name was Paulie Walnuts. Yes, Paulie Walnuts. Those two were always one of my favorite characters in that show. And the little bit they had, like Paulie has a laugh, which was, I cracked up. And then, like, even the little kid, which was sort of connecting to his little bad boy side, was like, oh, you got a gun? Can I see it? That was the one part where I was laughing. It's like, I kind of liked that scene. That was sort of funny. And, like, even the follow-up, we're like, hey, we can go. Let's go to eat at the Oyster Bar. Because then it's a big, like, oh, she's there. They'll recognize her. And like, nah, we got to go talk to the boss. They could have had something where every time they're trying to get close to her, they get close to her, they find out, but then, like, oh, they got to talk to the boss, or they're getting, it's Coney Island, so like, no, let's go on the Ferris wheel.
Yeah.
Let's go swim on the beach or something. That would be funny. That would have some sort, that would be funny, and that would make the movie better if you spent more time with those characters, and they're always, like, you know, the running gag is they're always getting close, but something distracts them.
Some Keystone Cops kind of thing. Yeah, that would have been much better. And actually including them made it seem more like they were trying to make something of The Sopranos, which is completely irrelevant to the movie. You know, that's a whole other movie, actually. But it's like, well, you know, let's throw in New Jersey and the mob. But, oh, The Sopranos.
Mm-hmm. Since we're sticking on the topic of The Sopranos with Paulie Walnuts, my favorite episode. You've seen The Sopranos?
Oh, yes.
So you know the episode when Paulie and Christopher are out in the woods trying to kill that Russian gangster?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I remember when Tony is calling them, and he's like, this guy's connected. He's, you know, during this war, he killed a bunch of Chechenian rebels, and he has connections with the Secretary of the Interior in Russia. But the connection's bad on the phone. So he goes, you won't believe this, Chris. This guy killed 16 Czechoslovakians. He was an interior decorator. And then Chris was like, his house looked like crap. That part always cracked me up.
Don't they end up eating ketchup packets?
Yes. That's one of my favorite episodes in that show. I was like, I want to watch The Sopranos now instead of this movie.
See, now that's interesting, because when I think of my favorite moments in The Sopranos, it's always the talky scenes involving the women characters, like his therapist.
Yeah.
And Edie Falco as his wife. You know, my favorite scenes have either one of those ladies in it, because they had so many great, great lines. And I think that's probably why I liked Wonder Wheel a little bit more than you, because they have this tragic figure that Kate Winslet plays. Mm-hmm. And she is irredeemable in some ways, but she's very understandable. You don't identify with her, but you also, you don't really, you want her to somehow end up better at the end of the movie than she is in the beginning, and that does not happen.
Good point. One more thing I want to bring up about The Sopranos, okay. Then I'll swear I'll stop talking about The Sopranos. But since Bobby Bacala is also in this movie, one of my other favorite scenes in The Sopranos is him and Tony are at this restaurant and they're talking about how it's almost one of the last few episodes and there's this gang war going on and they're talking about, it's bad times. And then Bobby Bacala goes, Quasimodo predicted all of this. And he goes, what? And he goes, Hurricane Katrina, 9/11, this gang war, it all connects. And he's like, don't you mean Nostradamus? He says, that's Nostradamus. Quasimodo is the Hunchback of Notre Dame. And Bobby Bacala goes, yeah, that's what I said, Notre-Dame-us.
Oh, good one.
And then he goes, that's a good one. No, that's different. He was like, that's a cathedral in France. Nostradamus has nothing to do with it. And he goes, I just realized you have your hunchback of your Notre Dame, and you also got your quarterback and your halfback of Notre Dame.
Oh, no.
And it just keeps going on
and on.
Oh, that's hilarious.
The writing in that show was just so, mm-hmm. so great.
Yeah. And since we're sticking on Begging Back to Wonder Wheel, another thing that stood out to me, I thought, was the cinematography.
Mm-hmm.
This was by Vittorio Storaro, which I was surprised. I thought he died. But he's one of the biggest cinematographers. He did a lot of work with Bertolucci in the 70s. He also shot Apocalypse Now. I thought this was very well shot, the way he used the colors and everything with the Coney Island and the way the sunlight reflected in a lot of people's hair, like especially Kate Winslet. That looked really good. So it's a very well shot film.
I wrote something down about that. He created a contrasting color scheme between the two main female characters. So Ginny has a warmer red-orange palette resembling the sun and symbolizing her attachment to the past. But for Carolina, he used lighter shades of blue, symbolically linking her to the future in accordance with the magic hour, the time between the sun setting and the moon rising.
Hmm.
So all that's intentional.
Okay. And I would do, once again, I would say I don't like this movie overall, but if I do have a couple of good points, and that's definitely at the cinematography by Storaro, and good to see him alive because I honestly thought he was dead.
Now, Woody Allen says that the title Wonder Wheel, in addition to referring to the Coney Island Wonder Wheel, by the way, that's the real thing, right, that you see there,
mm-hmm.
It's a metaphor for the characters. He says, the view is beautiful from the Wonder Wheel, but you're going no place. It has an element of romance to it, an element of beauty to it, but ultimately an element of futility. Is you just going around and around?
Yeah, and at the very end, after everything's happened, and the last lines, he says, do you want to go fishing? She says, no, I don't like fishing, which, it's been brought up many times that, she pretended to like fishing, but she doesn't like fishing. So it's sort of, it's going to go around and round and round their lives, and it's never going to change.
Yeah. Now, and a lot of people hate that kind of movie, but some people really love it.
Nothing quite comes to mind right now, but where people are stuck in this mode and they keep going. I can't think of anything at this moment, but there are movies like that I like. I just don't like this movie. It's not at all. But, it's talking about Woody Allen, he's about 81, but he's still making movies every year, maybe even more. Like, before this, there was 2016, there was Cafe Society or something. I haven't seen that. But he's, pumping out stuff every year. There was, a TV, even a miniseries he did recently. And there's going to be a movie coming out later this year. So it seems to me maybe he should stop making movies so regularly, because looking at a lot of reviews for his movies, last 5 years, they haven't been very good. Like, this movie got panned overall by critics. It doesn't seem like he's in the prime of his career like he was, in the 70s and 80s when he was doing, Annie Hall, Manhattan, Hannah and Her Sisters and all that. It seems that he's past his prime. I think he probably just needs to hang it up.
See, he says his favorite movie's Match Point, which is one of the more recent ones. And actually, I think that's the least Woody Allen-esque.
Wasn't it
a
mystery movie?
Yeah, about tennis.
Hmm.
I remember when I watched it thinking, I can't believe this is Woody Allen. It doesn't seem like Woody Allen. He has been nominated or won 136 awards, more than Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton, and Harold Lloyd combined. Hmm. But he doesn't care about awards.
He never shows up to the Oscars.
Yeah, so I think he just does movies because he must. It's just ingrained in him. But I don't think everything that he does is genius. I loved Midnight in Paris.
Yeah, I heard that was good.
It's awesome. I actually saw it at midnight in Paris.
I would say with Woody Allen, I'm not an expert, far from it. I've I've only seen four movies. So this movie, Radio Days, Annie Hall, and then Bananas. So I'm far from an expert, and that's like not even 10% of the movies he's done. But I have a feeling that, like, with this movie, and I wasn't that high on Annie Hall. I know it's considered a classic, but wasn't quite for me. I don't think he's for me. I don't like the dialogue. And I remember in Annie Hall, I thought his character was annoying. And I know he acts in a lot of movies, so a lot of his own movies. And that would just be a big turnoff for me because his character just gets on my nerves. Now, I did like Radio Days. I thought that film was kind of like a fun sort of nostalgia thing. And I actually thought Bananas was hilarious. That's one of his first films. And the part where Howard Cosell is like narrating this like government revolutionary overthrow in this banana republic, I thought that was funny. So I don't hate all of his movies. Maybe I know early on in his career he was doing a lot of goofy slapstick movies before he got more serious. Maybe I would like those, but I'll freely admit he's not for me.
Well, try Midnight in Paris. He's not in that one, so that kind of grating character he always plays
if the slapstick ones I might watch, but the later ones, when he puts himself into it, I might skip those.
But. Yeah, that might not be a bad idea. I don't think everything he does is great, but he has had moments of brilliance. Purple Rose of Cairo is really good.
And so what other ones do you really like?
Hannah
like,
and Her Sisters is really good.
And what about like Manhattan and Annie Hall?
I liked Annie Hall. I didn't love it. But I mean, some of the lines from that have become, you know, iconic. And I love Diane Keaton.
Yeah, and I did like the famous scene in that movie when they're on the rooftop and they're talking to each other, but the subtitles are like explaining what they're really thinking.
Yes, what they're thinking. Really thinking,
I did like that part. That part was funny.
Yeah, a lot of clever stuff.
And
there.
Even getting back to gangster talk, like the one scene in that movie when he's supposed to be like this famous writer or something, and like all these New Yorker, you know, New York Italian guys, oh, you Alfie Singer, right? And he was like, and then Diane Keaton goes like, where were you? I was getting mobbed by the cast of The Godfather over there.
I also love every time she drives. It's like the French Connection. She's a terrible driver. Yeah, it had really fun moments in it.
Yeah. So getting close to the end of my questions, is there anything else about Woody Allen or Wonder Wheel that you want to bring up or talk about?
Well, I don't think you should not see the movie just because we haven't talked it up. It does have, for real cinephiles, this would be something you would have to see because you have to see everything, especially if you like Woody Allen. It's certainly not the worst Woody Allen movie he's ever made.
What's the worst then?
What is the worst? Zelig. I did not care for.
Okay. Have you seen Radio Days?
A long time ago.
Did you like it?
It doesn't stand out in my mind, so. Okay.
What about Bananas?
See, my brother used to drag me to his movies, you know, back in the day. So Sleeper and all those old movies, those were hilarious. Mm-hmm. But they don't even seem like they're made by the same guy. That's made by a carefree person who can laugh. Woody Allen got kind of bitter in his old age, I think. So that's why I think a movie like Wonder Wheel is exactly the kind of movie I would expect him to make. He said he grew up in Coney Island, loved Coney Island, always wanted to get into a movie. So now he's kind of an older man looking back and making cynical movies, setting them in places from his childhood. So I think the cynicism comes out, but that's not necessarily bad, especially if you like that or if you like Woody Allen.
Yeah, I don't mind cynical movies. I mean, Kubrick is my all-time favorite director, and a lot of his movies were extremely cynical about human nature. It's just, I don't like this movie. I hate it.
But, all right, well, maybe we finally unseated Dogville as worst movie ever. We might have unseated it.
Okay, and tell us, so this is going to be for the Wonder theme. It's coming out, and I believe you said February, so tell us a bit more of that.
Well, the theme in the Horowitz Center is Wonder, so for our International Film Festival and our Diversity Film Festival coming up the next season, all the films will have something to do with Wonder or have Wonder in the title or make you wonder why we chose it, because this Woody Allen movie, do you like it or not?
Yeah, so I know I've been really hard on this movie. I really don't like it, but still say go this will be a fun event. Go check it out. You know, I'm just saying buyer beware, watcher beware. So you might not like it, but you know what? Make your own opinion for yourself. Who knows? You may think, come on the show and tell me I'm full of it and this is one of the best movies of last year.
You know, we may end up having a really good Q&A afterwards.
Yeah. Okay, then. So last question I'll have is tell us a little bit about the classes you got coming up in the fall.
In the fall, I will be teaching Intro to Film, American Cinema, World Cinema, and Film and Philosophy with Dr. Helen Mitchell.
Okay. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been talking about the 2017 film Wonder Wheel, directed by Woody Allen. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com under the category Armchair Directors. Pastor Westhaver, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
For The Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying so long, and we will see you next week.